Thank you, Jeff. Again, I'm Jason Bond. I'm working at the Delta Research and Extension Center in Stoneville. And for those of you that don't know me, up until this point, I've worked strictly in rice. And late this past year, I took over operations for cotton and corn weed control. So before I start, I just got to say that I wasn't involved in any of the research that I'm going to report on. It was all done by other personnel at Stoneville. Let me get my clicker down right. So I think we have an excellent group of research and extension personnel at Mississippi State. And a special acknowledgement to, do I have a pointer, Jeff? Okay. But Dr. Vijay Nandula, who is our weed physiologist at Stoneville, and Ms. Robin Bond, they were, most of the results here are a product of their efforts. And then also Dr. Dan Poston, who worked at Stoneville up until late this summer, he was very instrumental in a lot of this work. So what I really want to do is tell you everything I know about Italian ryegrass in about 15 minutes. But start off just some general stuff, identifying characteristics, and then we'll work on through and end up with the specifics on what we're recommending to control Italian ryegrass. But Italian ryegrass is most commonly confused with perennial ryegrass, and just a few years ago, it was reclassified as a subspecies of perennial ryegrass, but it has a short membranous ligule, but the most identifying characteristics are the waxy undersides of the leaves, and then the auricles at the collar and the red base. Now the auricles are relatively uncommon in grass species. There are just a few species that have these appendages at the collar, so that's a very distinct identifier. And then the red base is useful in distinguishing Italian ryegrass from perennial ryegrass. Italian ryegrass is used as a cover crop. It's used on roadsides for reclamation of those areas and often as a forage. So it can at times escape cultivation and become established as a weed. It thrives on fertile soils and mild climates. It has a low tolerance for hot and dry climates and also for harsh climate during the winter. So the Mississippi Delta during the wintertime really provides a nearly perfect environment for Italian ryegrass. It begins emerging in the fall, usually when the temperatures are consistently below 90 degrees. Peak emergence does occur in the fall, but you'll also see emergence throughout the winter and sometimes on into the spring. It's classified as a winter annual, but it often either behaves as a biennial or a short-lived perennial that grows vigorously during the fall and can also grow on through the winter and early spring, and if the conditions are right, you'll even see it continue to grow through the summer. It cross-pollinates openly, so we have a lot of hybrids across species of Lolium, and it propagates exclusively by seeds, and these seeds are relatively large for grass seeds, so there's not a lot of dispersal very far from the parent plant, and a lot of the long distance dispersal is going to be a product of human activity. To date, we have four species of Lolium that have evolved resistance to 11 herbicide chemistries in 14 different countries. So obviously Lolium is pretty high on the list of important weeds, especially in Australia where they have a multitude of problems with Lolium species. Italian ryegrass has evolved resistance to four classes of herbicides in the U.S. And these are the ACCase inhibitors, the ALS inhibitors, the ureas, which I wasn't familiar with that case of resistance in Italian ryegrass, and then the glycines, which obviously is glyphosate. The first Lolium resistance to glyphosate was in the population of rigid ryegrass from Australia, and then in Italian ryegrass, the first case was in Chile in 2001, and then in the U.S. in 2004 in Oregon. Now, the unique thing about our problem in Mississippi with glyphosate-resistant Italian ryegrass is it is the first case of a documented Italian ryegrass resistance in a field crops situation. The two populations from Chile and Oregon were both documented in orchards. So our problem is fairly unique right now, but in the early 2000s, this was a pretty common scene driving around the west side of the Delta along the Mississippi River in Mississippi. The problem currently is, as far as we know, is a relatively small acreage, and this site was in Washington County, which for those of you that are not familiar with Mississippi, is right along the river in the west central part of the state. But as our environment offers a pretty much perfect conditions for growing Italian ryegrass, we also put pretty much perfect selection pressure on it for it to develop resistance. Because any resistance problem is a product of selection pressure that we put on individuals of the species. Now, for Italian ryegrass, obviously this was repeated applications of glyphosate over several years. But then somewhat unique in Mississippi, we do have a high percentage of our ground that is grown using some form of reduced tillage practices. So it's kind of a double whammy on the selection pressure with the glyphosate and the reduced tillage. But 2005 was the first year that we really acknowledged that we had a widespread problem with resistant ryegrass. So in the spring of that year, there were two populations that were screened for resistance, and both of these were collected in Washington County, one near Stoneville and then the other one a little bit south and east of Stoneville. But dose response trials conducted in the greenhouse, Dr. Nandula was responsible for this work, and basically the two populations that were studied, they exhibited a threefold tolerance to glyphosate compared with the susceptible check that was used in that work. But we now think that this resistance in a lot of cases is probably much higher than that, because in the field we oftentimes see that as much as a gallon per acre won't control some of these populations. And again, the county in red is Washington County. We're relatively certain that we have it in Bolivar County, which is the county directly north, and then Sunflower to the east, but more than likely it's radiated out further from that. But just for acres, right now we say probably anywhere from 10 to 30,000 acres impacted with glyphosate-resistant Italian ryegrass. So what I want to do for the rest of the time is just kind of go through and summarize and highlight the work that's been done with ryegrass up to this point. And again, I wasn't involved in the work, so hopefully I can adequately relay the message that the other researchers had. So early on, in 2005-2006, we really focused in on controlling ryegrass with post-emergence herbicides, and then the later work over the last couple of years has been more focused in on pre-emergence control. So as a follow-up to the initial resistance screening, Dr. Poston and his group evaluated some alternative herbicides to see, I guess, kind of where we were at that time, because we do have problems with ALS resistance in ryegrass and also ACC-ACE resistance. We have ALS resistant ryegrass in Mississippi, but it's listed on the weedscience.org website as being on roadsides, and no one at Stoneville is familiar with the case of ALS resistance in the fields in the Delta. Just quickly, what they found on the alternative herbicides was really you needed gramoxone to get the percent mortality up to something that was manageable. Select at 8 ounces was adequate on smaller ryegrass, but once it got up larger, you really needed some high doses of gramoxone for adequate mortality. Dr. Nandula did a prior exposure trial where he evaluated control with glyphosate and some combinations with glyphosate following a sublethal dose of glyphosate. And he found that the prior exposure really didn't impact the control, but the real take-home message from that work was that the glyphosate plus Select Max or gramoxone were really our best options, non-residual, for controlling small ryegrass in the fall. And we'll come back to that in just a few minutes. So after that initial work was concluded, we really tried to hone in on some salvage applications in the spring when the ryegrass was large. So there were two studies to highlight there. One was a Select Max rate study, and this was Select Max with and without glyphosate, and then we also had a ammonium sulfate factor in also. And then a sequential study where we had different herbicides applied before and after the ryegrass flowered. But just to show a little bit of data, here we had a Select Max at three rates from 0.047 to 0.094, and I believe that's ranging from 6 to 12 ounces of product. And then with and without glyphosate, and those two lower rates of Select Max, there was a benefit on control when we added the glyphosate in with the Select until we got up to the highest rate of 0.094 where there wasn't a benefit. So this was useful information, but none of the treatments gave us more than 70% control. So really a single pass application in the spring, it was decided at that point that that really wasn't going to be a viable option. So that's where the sequential trial came in. And here we had glyphosate and then glyphosate plus two rates of Select Max, which is 6 and 9 ounces, or Gramoxone. This was applied in sometime in March and prior to the ryegrass flowering. And then we had Gramoxone or two rates of Select Max applied, I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks between the applications, but after the ryegrass had flowered. And really what we had, the only two treatments that you could really hang your hat on was glyphosate plus the two rates of Select Max prior to anthesis or Gramoxone, then followed with the highest rate of Gramoxone. So all of those treatments are very expensive, and the problem is that we could knock it down, but we have a lot of residue that's left on the soil surface when we're going into the time of planting. And this poses a pretty serious problem for our producers, because for the most part, our equipment is not set up to plant no-till into a high level of residue. So following that study, we tried to hone in more on a timing. We're still trying to think about it from a post-emergence aspect, but we thought if we went earlier, maybe we could knock it down sooner and have less residue. So we had a post-emergence timing test, and this was a large study. We had multiple rates of glyphosate and then glyphosate plus several other different post-emergence herbicides, Gramoxone, Ignite, and then we had some other treatments with dicamba and 2,4-D, because those are very popular treatments in the Delta for horseweed. We wanted to see what impact they had mixing the broadleaf herbicide with the glyphosate had on the Italian ryegrass. And really the thing to point out here is obviously the fall treatments were more consistent than the spring treatments, but we really needed the Gramoxone Enion at those higher rates in the spring to really knock it down. And again, as with the other test, we still have a lot of biomass left on the soil surface. So that kind of brings us to where we've been focusing in last year and this year. And we had a pretty large fall residual trial that we've done for the last couple of years. And I just pulled out a few of the treatments just to give you an idea of where we were at. But we had Treflan incorporated. Then we had both an incorporated and a surface application of Prowl H2O. And then multiple rates of Dual and Command and KIH-485. Which, for those of you who are not familiar with that, that's an experimental herbicide that Kumeyaay is currently developing. And then also one rate of Valor. And 180 days after application, that's 6 months. So these applications were made both years sometime in the first couple of weeks of November. So you're looking at residual control lasting all the way out to the time of cotton planting. And our best options there were Dual, and really the two higher rates of Dual, and then all rates of Command, and then the higher rate of the KIH-485. And just gives you an idea of what we were seeing. Very heavy pressure at the site where we conducted this work, but the Command and the Dual really are where we're going right now with these fall residual applications. The control holds all the way to planting, And it also, obviously, we don't have very much residue on the soil surface. Some of the other treatments, the Prowl, Treflan, the lower rates of KIH-485, they offered pretty good control for quite a while, but they tended to break in the spring, and so then they were going to require a follow-up application in the spring. So the Command and Dual is really where we are on the residuals. This is another test that we've only done once. We have it out in the field now, but we had Gramoxone tank mixed with some different residual herbicides at three timings. And the residuals that we used were Direx, Linex, Gold, and I believe Valor. And the best treatment out of this was Gramoxone plus Direx in the fall. Out to 140 days after that fall application, we were still up over 90% control. So I think the interesting thing here is, you know, people ask, well, what do I do if I don't find out that I have it until in the spring? Well, at least with the Gramoxone and Direx, you can knock it down as late as February. It's not perfect, but at least it's it leaves a manageable amount of residue to be able to get in and get the crop in. So that brings me down to just trying to summarize 4 years worth of research in just a couple of minutes. But basically, we know the single pass applications in the spring are not where we want to be. We can knock it down with the sequentials, but again, you've got to have some tank mixtures of some pretty high dollar treatments. And the best one there would be sequential applications of Gramoxone at a pound followed by a pound. So that's a full gallon of Gramoxone that it's going to take to knock down the ryegrass, and you still are going to have problems at planting. The Gramoxone in the fall is very effective, but then again, we have multiple flushes, so it kind of jeopardizes that treatment as being very effective. So again, Dual Command and KIH-485, excellent control that holds for quite some time. I didn't touch on another trial that was done because Robin's going to speak about it later in the week, but tillage has shown to be a benefit where it fits the producer's system. This is not so much an issue in cotton as it is in soybeans, where we do have a higher percentage of our acres in some form of reduced tillage in soybeans. And then again, as I mentioned, the Gramoxone plus Direx, as late as February, you still can get yourself into a manageable situation. So our ultimate recommendation is the fall applied residual herbicides. So, but as with anything, even after 4 years, there's still a lot of unanswered questions. So I think the most important one here, and this is something that Dr. Nandula and his crew are really going to get on next spring, but determining what our the full geographic distribution in Mississippi of resistant ryegrass is. And then along with that is the question of what do the tank mixtures of glyphosate and dicamba or 2,4-D, when we're going after horseweed, what are those doing to control of ryegrass? We have some cases where we know, or we have not suspected a resistance problem in the past at a specific site. We put out glyphosate plus D or dicamba, and all of a sudden we have reduced control of ryegrass. So there's a question there about the interaction among those products. And then we don't know anything about the resistance mechanism. We know that the populations from Chile and Oregon, they exhibited two different mechanisms, both target site and non-target site. So we really need to understand that so we can decide how fast the problem could potentially spread. And then the last one, I think, is crop budgets. Growers, you know, you don't tend to have a lot of money left in November after you've got your crop out to be putting out, you know, several hundred acres of herbicide in the fall. And then tillage obviously is going to, you're going to incur an added expense there if we start recommending tillage. And then also, and this is something that we've talked about quite a bit this fall, you saw some of the pictures that we had from the Command and the Dual. And we basically have a slick soil surface that lays out there throughout the winter. So there's a question of interactions of the herbicide and soil loss. And we have some scientists at USDA that we're visiting with there at Stonewall that hopefully are going to help us address some of those issues. So I apologize for throwing so much information at you all at once, but if you have any questions or if you want to discuss any of this, I'd be more than happy to do that. I didn't hear your question. Yes, sir. That particular trial was designed specifically for cotton. Yes, sir. I don't believe we've done any work with the triazines. I'm trying to picture the treatments in my head. I don't believe that we've done that. And then your question about timing. Have we done any work earlier than November? Have not up to this point, and that, you know, is a combination of a lot of different things. Generally, we're pretty hot in October in the Delta. It doesn't really tend to come up till mid to late October. And then, obviously, working with a bunch of different crops, we kind of like to get everything else out before we start our winter research. Yes, sir, Dr. Smith. Up to this point, it's been reactive. You know, when there's been a question, we've gone and looked at it. But we have scheduled for next spring an extensive survey up and down the Delta, north to south and east to west, to see exactly where the problem is. And that's going to encompass more than just ryegrass. We'll obviously do the ryegrass in the spring and horseweed too. We're going to do a little bit of survey work with it. And then come fall, we're going to focus in on our other summer annuals. Oh, I definitely think that's the, I mean, there may be some, you know, some of the cases obviously are due to selection pressure. I mean, that's, I believe that, but I think the movement is a product of our activities. All right. Thank you, Jeff.